Focus Black Oklahoma. I'm Ariel Davis.
And I'm Colby Webster. Research increasingly shows that racial and ethnic minorities are disproportionately affected by COVID-19 in the United States. According to recent data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, COVID-19 hospitalization rates among Black people and Hispanic or Latino people were both about 4.7 times the rate of non-Hispanic white people. The National Urban League's State of Black America report, released in August, states the infection rate for Blacks is 62 per 10,000, compared with 23 per 10,000 for whites. Latinos see even more infections, 73 per 10,000. While there's no evidence that people of color have genetic or other biological factors that make them more likely to be affected by COVID-19, people of color are more likely to have underlying health conditions, such as type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, which increases your risk of severe illness with COVID-19. But experts also know that where people live and work affects their health. Over time, these factors lead to different health risks among racial and ethnic minority groups. And life in North Tulsa, for some, is challenging. According to the City of Tulsa Equality Indicators report in 2019, unemployment for Black residents was 12.4%, compared to 5.6% for white residents. The median household income for a Black family was just under $31,000, while it was nearly $52,000 for white families. According to the equality indicators, about 35% of Black residents in Tulsa own their home, compared to 58% of white residents. The equality indicators report that in 2019, Black students were suspended from school at 13.7%, compared to 4.9% for Hispanic children. White students were not listed. Meanwhile, in lower-income households, students had a dropout rate of 16.7% compared to 7.1% for higher-income households.
Focus Black Oklahoma and KOSU Radio were awarded a Solutions Journalism Network grant to examine how COVID-19 has affected the North Tulsa community in a three-part series called The Black Plague. The series will look at the pandemic's effect on youth, domestic violence, evictions, and homelessness. Here, we look at the first topic, how the lives of North Tulsa's young people have been altered by this deadly virus. At the Dream Center in North Tulsa, both adults and kids are receiving some TLC. The Dream Center has been around since 1999 as a community center for the North Tulsa community. It has become an invaluable resource during the pandemic. That's especially so for youth who have few places to go and might be struggling with distance learning and mental health challenges stemming from a lack of activity. Tim Newton is the program director at the Dream Center.
So during the past 6 months, we have really ramped up our food distribution. You know, one thing, Dream Center, we've been here for 20 years and we've always done food. We have five pillars here at the Dream Center: food, clothing, medical, education, and character development, and recreation and character development. And food has just expanded exponentially. Just to date, we've served over 5.9 million meals since COVID has taken place. That has been the most significant increase that we have had since COVID has taken place. But then also just trying to figure out how to facilitate programming for kids that still keep them in a safe place and just being able to be able to check up on them. You know, so within our food distribution, we were going door to door and passing out meals to boys and girls. I jokingly always say, you know, that we had the largest Uber Eats program in Tulsa, because we're passing out 2,700 meals a day to a little over 2,000 boys and girls every single day. And it was fun, but it also gave us opportunity to kind of check on the boys and girls and find out how things are going. And because the Dream Center, it was very often was times where there would be opportunities where if there's something going on at home, when they came to the Dream Center, like there's someone that can check on them. You know, very similar to the schools. The teachers, like, I see them every single day. I know something's off. And And if I need to call DHS or intervene, I can do so. And I think also the people that may want to do harm to a child, knowing that there is someone that's going to be checking up on them, they're more or less likely to do something, knowing that that other outside adult figure is in that child's life, you know. And so that's something we really want to maintain by going out and dropping off meals that helped us kind of do that.
Madeline is a fifth grader. She says distance learning is kind of boring, but spending time at the Dream Center allows her to see some of her friends.
We had to just sit around all day and work on the computer, and we never like get to see our teacher or our friends and stuff, and we don't make new friends at all, and we can't like talk that much. It helps a lot, but not like that much, because I only get to see a couple of my friends and not all of them, because not all of them come here.
Life outside of the Dream Center is also different due to COVID.
I can't have a birthday party because we were supposed to have a birthday party a long time ago, but my birthday was March 5th, and we were going to have my birthday after March 5th, but we still haven't figured out what we could do because COVID and stuff. It makes me feel really sad and really mad, and like, I don't want it to happen.
In the midst of an ever-polarizing news cycle, we've been forced into a physical separation, a lockdown for our health, a timeout of sorts to de-escalate the viral spread of an extremely contagious virus. However, before this crisis became the norm, there was a severe imbalance in our community. This imbalance was stealing 11 years from the lives of our North Tulsa neighbors. Its slow violence carries on today, a certainty that carries through these uncertain times. We start with one of the most vulnerable populations, the youth. Oklahoma's children have the highest ACE scores in the country. ACE meaning adverse childhood experiences that affect people into adulthood. Not coincidentally, the state tops the country in many of those physical and psychological problems too. Through these uncertain times, children from North Tulsa specifically have dealt with police brutality, challenges with mental health, isolation, and a lack of peer support. Jasmine Trotter is a school-based mental health therapist with Family and Children's Services in Tulsa. She also works with the mobile mental health crisis team known as COPES. She works with youth ages 5 to 12 years old.
I think like this, you know, eventually in the long term will affect these kids going through this pandemic, because like you said, like they already experienced a lot of things like lack of having basic needs, you know, not knowing if you're going to get your next meal. And even just the traumatic experiences that they experienced already outside of the pandemic. So I feel like with this pandemic, it's going to be more difficult when we do get to a place to where things are somewhat normal. You know, it's going to affect them in the long run just because of the unknown of what could happen on top of things that they already experience on a daily basis.
Thank you. The city of Tulsa has a race problem. Nearly 100 years after a white mob decimated a 36-block neighborhood known as the Greenwood District, often referred to as Black Wall Street, and killing hundreds of black residents, the city has twice erased a unifying symbol for the black communities across the United States as well as the world. Black Lives Matter. The mural was painted on Greenwood Avenue on Juneteenth weekend. The main artery of black life in the district, Greenwood, is a north-south street that travels the length of the community. Before the massacre, Simon Barry's bus line carried African Americans on this thoroughfare from the more residential north side to Archer or 2nd Street, the furthest south blacks were allowed, unless they were domestic workers or laborers in white Tulsa. Greenwood Avenue was once a thriving hub for black businesses. In 1905, O.W. Gurley opened the first enterprise in the district at the corner of Greenwood and Archer. The Black Lives Matter mural spanned the entire first block of the avenue to the north. The B was in front of Gurley's former business. It was painted on the street days before President Donald Trump's first major rally since the beginning of the pandemic. The city council voted to erase the mural after other organizations and residents proposed other street murals, including Blue Lives Matter. It was washed away one Monday morning in October. Later, a group of activists painted a BLM sign in front of City Hall, a symbol of protest against local officials, once again erasing part of the community. Just after a tense exchange between Black Lives Matter activists and armed militia members, I caught up with Jack, who was also there to tell us more.
I got to the center of the universe in Tulsa, Oklahoma, around 10:45 a.m. People were beginning to gather there. Music was playing. News crews were assembling. Before the speeches started, actually, a Blue Lives Matter semi-counter-protest walked by, not through, but down the bridge from the center of the universe, and everyone at the Black Lives Matter protest was encouraged to applaud, and most to all did at the Blue Lives Matter counter protest. The organizers at the Black Lives Matter protest were very adamant in saying that we don't want to play into what they think we are. We want to show them what we are truly about, which is not violence, not us versus them kind of mentality, but equality. After that, they walked by and nothing bad happened, and then speeches went on at the center of the universe for maybe about an hour. And at the end, they were saying, we're going to have a march. And we marched. I don't quite know the streets, unfortunately, but we walked from the center of the universe, past the train station, around the corner, all under the watch of heavily armed militia members. Unfortunately, they seemed to be at every corner, which I had never seen before in my life. Definitely was a little intimidating and something I felt like I'd only seen on the news in the past, but there it was in real life.
The city's power washing equipment, drones in the background, reverberating between City Hall and the Performing Arts Center, while water blasts away large yellow letters that spell BLM. The letters were quickly painted by Black Lives Matter activists. Seth was there to tell us more about what happened.
So the city of Tulsa has brought out their power wash equipment to erase the BLM letters that were painted, probably 15 feet by 10 feet each letter. And whenever they painted on the street, it was considered unlawful assembly. It took them all about 5 minutes or less to do it because they kind of knew something would happen. And sure enough, they arrested two Caucasian activists. And yeah, they're cleaning the street. Like, now the protest ended not even 30 minutes ago, and they're already out here erasing, trying to erase. But I don't think they'll actually be able to erase the movement. They cordoned off a section of the street. Any willing, able-bodied non-African Americans that were willing to block off the space. Like I said, 5 minutes or less, they unrolled the tarps, had the letters already cut out, threw buckets of paint down, started rolling on the pavement, and sure enough, the cops were there just as soon as they were done.
Tulsa is the only city in the country to remove a Black Lives Matter mural.
Like many Black Americans across the country, some in Tulsa say they are fearful to call police. Tawana Adkins saw firsthand the effect police brutality had on her son, who was 14. He was walking to a store with his cousin when white police officers stopped them for allegedly jaywalking. The incident took place in June in North Tulsa. It was caught on video by a bystander and the officers' body cameras. The videos show police grabbing the teen from behind, forcing him to the ground, and handcuffing him. Later, an officer is shown kicking the teen as he is sitting in the police vehicle. The teen is then tossed out of the car onto the street.
Hey! Slow!
Listen, man, just relax.
Hey, chill out, bro. What are you doing? What you guys doing? Why are you trying to choke his neck? Nobody's choking him. You choking him, man. Just chill out.
Hey, man, what you got? Why are you putting your hands on him? Why are you arresting him? Why are you putting handcuffs on him? Because all he was doing was jaywalking.
We just want to talk with him.
Does he have anything?
And he had to act a fool like that.
Hey, sir, does he have anything?
I appreciate you being cool, man.
I'm just trying to tell you, he has nothing on him. I have nothing on him, sir.
Okay, don't reach in your pockets. Just relax.
Adkins feels this was an injustice.
They were just walking to the store and were stopped and just, you know, just profiled and just stereotyped and just assumed that they were up to no good.
When Adkins was interviewed, she was preparing to go to Osage County Court with her son, who is going to be charged in the case for resisting arrest, assaulting an officer, and jaywalking. Court records for juveniles are sealed unless the judge lifts the seal. For Adkins, who doesn't own a car and must rent one, the hearing was yet another burden for her and her son to face.
He's just not really happy about going because he feels, you know, I didn't do, you know, I was minding my own business, so he's bitter about it. It's just a big mess. And I'm just hoping it was just like a nightmare and I could wake up and it'd be over.
Tulsa Mayor G.T. Bynum wrote in a Facebook post that he wants every child to feel safe walking in their neighborhoods. A spokesperson for the Tulsa Police Department says an internal review is still taking place. Similar charges were filed against a 20-year-old Black woman just a month after the incident with Ms. Adkins' son, resisting arrest, assaulting an officer, and jaywalking. These sentences are indicative of systemic racism and over-policing of the Black community that have been a part of Tulsa's history since pre-statehood.
What y'all follow me for?
Hey,
what y'all follow me for?
Relax.
What you follow me for?
Because you were jaywalking.
I just don't understand why you got to put us in handcuffs.
You can breathe.
Turn him over.
I can't breathe.
You're fine.
I can't breathe.
Turn him over.
I can't breathe.
Hey, sir, can you
let me? I can't breathe.
Sit down.
Hey, man, I'm
sitting
down. All right. You're going to put your hands
now,
on
me. Now, listen.
You.
Okay, well, then you
better listen. I'll get off of you if you want to act like a
friend.
Once you decide to act like
a friend. What you want me for? What you want me for?
Here. Let's just walk in the car.
Sir, he has handcuffs on.
Yeah, he does.
He has handcuffs on. What is he going to do?
Come on.
What is he going to do, sir?
Stay right there.
Call my mama.
Call my mama.
Dreesen Heath with Human Rights Watch has studied and written about Tulsa and its history of racism and policing. She says to truly understand Tulsa today, it's important to look back at the early days of the city, including the 1921 race massacre.
It kind of breaks down into past and present, although the past definitely informs the present. And with the past, you revert back to the 1921 race massacre, because mistrust between Black Tulsans and the Tulsa police dates back until at least the Tulsa race massacre, which occurred May 31st to June 1st, 1921, which is an event when a white mob besieged on the historic Greenwood District and a well-known affluent Black community across, well-known to Black people across the U.S. as Black Wall Street, which resulted in the killing of hundreds of people, mostly Black, and reduced the Greenwood District that was 35 square blocks, city blocks, to basically rubble and ash.
She notes that no one has been held accountable for the actions of the white mob in the nearly 100 years since the tragedy was inflicted on Greenwood and its residents and businesses.
That's the past portion. The present portion zooms you in to the present day and zooms you in, particularly for Human Rights Watch, the series of high-profile killings in Tulsa, one most prominently the killing of Terrence Crutcher in the middle of the road next to his abandoned vehicle, just needing help, but instead he got a death sentence. And Oklahoma already has high rates of police killings more broadly compared to other states in the U.S., with Black people being killed at a rate almost three times greater than white people. And so that's extremely glaring, especially when you have just Tulsa police alone killing 16 people from 2016 to 2018, which is a high rate for the population. In several of those killings, you know, raise serious questions about what are police officers responding to? What are they doing? Why are Black people being killed disproportionately? What those functions then exhibit? And what are the consequences of the functions of policing? One of those is police killings. That's the most kind of egregious human rights violation. And obviously lethal force is at the end of the spectrum in terms of use of force. But our report, our 2019 report, found everyday police abuse is rampant in Tulsa.
She says the poorer parts of Tulsa are predominantly in North Tulsa, which is where Black residents have historically lived. The affluent parts are in South Tulsa, where the majority of residents are white. Interstate 244 creates a separation. She says it essentially divided Tulsa by race and class.
Finding substantial racial disparities in almost every category of treatment by police, arresting people at Black people at 2.3 times the rate of white people, even though they make up, you know, 17% of the population, but are still turning up in the statistics as 36% of all arrestees. So that's not proportionate. And it calls into question what is the type of policing that is deployed in North Tulsa versus in other parts of the city.
North Tulsa youth are not immune from these statistics either. According to the Tulsa Equality Indicators 2019 report, Black juveniles are over 3 times as likely to be arrested as white juveniles.
And now, Black Tulsans must deal with another inequity, COVID-19. North Tulsa residents, especially youth, are feeling the negative consequences of the virus in a myriad of ways. Everything from distance learning, to transportation, to mental health care has been made more challenging due to a lack of resources available in the area.
Some of the biggest things that I've noticed so far would be engagement with therapy for me, and also just the struggles with parents trying to help kids navigate this new way of life and living, and also like their lack of social support that they normally have when we're in school. And also I see a lot of the parents I work with struggle with meeting like basic needs, because a lot of the times the kids are at school and so they receive like, you know, the food, and so they struggle more at home with providing that additional food that they would normally get at school.
Jasmine Trotter, a therapist at Family and Children Services, says kids who stay at home for distance learning may experience more conflict with siblings. And some kids have lots of energy that cannot be used while stuck inside.
They can't really go outside. A lot of parents are afraid of letting them outside because of COVID. And so they don't really have a lot of money to take them places, and they don't have transportation to really go places. And so a lot of times they have built up frustration and inside the home with being with a bunch of people. And a lot of them live in homes with a lot of adults and children in the house, so they don't have any time to themselves. It's hard for them to practice their coping skills. So it's been a very difficult time for them.
In terms of distance learning, she says it has been a challenge with some of her clients and families because the parents can often struggle with technology as much as their young children.
They're not very familiar with using technology or computers or navigating it on their own. And so they struggle with getting onto the Zoom calls, getting onto like all the apps they have to use, like the Canvas. And doing all those things has been very difficult for them to navigate on their own. And especially when you have multiple kids in a home, trying to help each kid navigate that has been very difficult. So a lot of them miss Zoom calls. They don't get the homework complete because parents are unaware of how to help them with these assignments. And a lot of parents have actually expressed to me that distance learning have been more difficult than when they were in school. Like the material is more difficult because it seems like they're giving them maybe some type of standard package that maybe TPS or the schools are given to give to the kids. And so it's not like the general learning while they're in school.
Not only are kids missing the school instruction, but also the peer-to-peer and adult interaction they receive during the school day.
They make them feel safe, you know, while they're in that space. And then they don't have, like I said, like the peers. And some of the kids who don't have siblings, or if you're just with siblings who maybe be different ages from you, sometimes you want to connect with somebody that's of your same age. And so that definitely impacts kids and them being able to feel normal and just to have that social support at home.
And likewise, you mentioned that engagement seems to be pretty low. Could you tell me more about what engagement looks like and how that is you offering your services to kind of help mitigate some of these problems?
So for me, engagement, the difficult thing I want to say to that may be the cause of lack of engagement would be, like, you know, a lot of parents don't have consistent numbers, and so they change contact information a lot. So then it's difficult for me to get in touch with them. And then some parents work, and then I have to have the parent there to do the service with the child. And so then that's another barrier to me engaging with a child. And even with a child being focused with me on the video call, like I said, like with the additional stimuli around them, it's hard to engage when we're not face-to-face. And we're usually face-to-face in a room by ourselves, and so it's difficult, and they can't be as open with me as they probably would like to be because they have parents around, other siblings around, so they can't really say what they want to say to me.
Trotter was raised in North Tulsa herself, and most of her clients live there.
And I feel like it's definitely harder for those living in North Tulsa already because of lack of transportation. Like, we don't have a lot of buses that run that way. A lot of people there don't have employment. A lot of them, you know, they don't have near places to go to grocery shop and food. And so just this pandemic has made it more difficult because it's making it harder for them to be able to access and get things that they need. And it's a lack of community resources as well. And so that affects them, you know, as well as being able to just be provided with the things that we need to live daily.
As restrictions lessened in Oklahoma, the Dream Center was able to interact more directly with the children and youth participants. Here's the Dream Center's Pastor Newton.
And then this summer, we did what we call our summer pop-up camps, where we did camps within the housing authorities and within the neighborhoods, and we did small activities, and we set up literally like 10 by 10 pop-up tents, and we spread them out, and we did little activities. And, you know, we might have two or three kids per tent doing activities with the boys and girls. And so it was doing that it helped kind of alleviate not us being able to, since we couldn't bring the boys and girls to the building, we were able to go to them and do that.
Tulsa Public Schools was one of the few school districts in the area that started and stayed in distance learning mode for several months. Though pre-K through third grade students returned to school in person on November 16th, all TPS students will study remotely through the end of 2020. The Dream Center helps some students with virtual learning by extending their internet connection into the center's parking lot.
But I think, you know, if we're able to facilitate even a smaller group of boys and girls of 60 or 75, that we can spread them out throughout our building, that they can come and they can, you know, get that education enrichment and do their distance learning and have someone there, and they can be in a safe place so their parents can go to work. I think that's something that was very needed, and for us to be able to serve the community and serve our boys and girls and families.
Newton says the boys and girls he works with have been affected more so than what people may think.
I've seen them gain weight, you know, because they're not doing a lot of physical activity. And, you know, the joke has been, you know, I'm gaining my COVID-19, and it's like 19 pounds, you know, kind of like your freshman 15. And I've seen this over this last 6 months of boys and girls like significantly gaining weight, especially our teenagers, because of them just sitting around the house and not having the physical activity of like going outside and playing. And they roped off all the playgrounds, and there was some places they took down the rims off of the basketball goals so they wouldn't play basketball. But that physical activity was really important. But then also just socially, you know, I had a 9-year-old boy. He came to me and said that he was depressed. And it was really one of the first times in my 12 years of doing this that I had a kid actually said that I'm feeling depressed, that actually articulated that. That was really alarming to me when I heard them say that, because honestly, I just never heard a kid say that before. And I was like, why do you feel that way? She's like, I don't get a chance to talk to anyone anymore. I don't see anyone. I'm not able to see my friends. And so I think the mental state of our boys and girls, as resilient as they are, it's something that we, as especially adults, and people say like we want to care about our boys and girls, like we need to give attention to and allow our boys and girls to talk and decompress and the baby process, like what is taking place, because, you know, just like us, they are a part of something that we could not control. And they're more so. We can't control what's happened, but we do have some choice in what's taking place.
As of the middle of November, Newton says the Dream Center has not had any positive COVID-19 cases. Classes are kept small, and if a positive case were to arise, parents would be notified to quarantine. During recent visits to the Dream Center, students worked on their laptops and played basketball. Chris is another youth from the Dream Center. He says during the summer, he was at home most of the time.
It was all right. Yeah, and playing basketball. I got 2 goals. I spread them out, and I play full court with my brother. And yes, I play with my friends.
Like Madeline, Chris says distance learning has had some challenges.
Yeah, because it's hard to like wake up early and stare on the screen all day, and then, yeah, I'll be all right. I can't do that.
North Tulsa, childhood was already filled with challenges both institutional and internal. A spontaneous, once-in-a-lifetime pandemic came about, further highlighting the circumstances these children endure in the city. The structural inequalities these children grow up in were made worse by the pandemic. Every day is a struggle for families to get by. But with resources like the Dream Center and Family and Children's Services, families are coping and learning to adjust as best they can to an unknown that is little end in sight. Listening to the first segment in a 3-part series examining COVID-19 in North Tulsa. Our team includes Colby Webster, Ariel Davis, Christy Eaton, and Jamie Glisson. Focus Black Oklahoma's associate producers are Bracken Clark and Ali Shaw. Our executive producer is Koresh Ali Lansana. Thanks to Tulsa Artists Fellowship, KOSU Radio, and Solutions Journalism Network. Focus Black Oklahoma is a project of Tri-City Collective.
Theme music is by Moffitt Music. Our contributing music artist on this broadcast is Two Piece. Visit his website at musicmanent.com. Additional music provided by Malachi Burgess. Available under Mally Motives on all streaming platforms.
Our second episode in the series will look at the effects the coronavirus has had on domestic violence. Stay tuned for information about its air date and give it a listen.